time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel, and it's Dialogue Conspiracy number 315, and it is April the 2nd, 1978. This is tax time for all of you nice people who are lucky enough to have an income that's taxable this past year. And the Treasury Department will be collecting your money, if they haven't already, for your earnings from 1977. It's with great hesitancy that I send in a check. I keep thinking that there must be some way to oppose a system that is wasting so much of the tax dollar and not putting it to good use. And certainly there's taxation without representation. But I never yet have found a form that I could properly express my anger and get away with not paying the taxes, or at least seeing that they're put to some use that I would wish to see them be spent for, instead of in the weapons race and the way they go with various assassination teams and torture teams and police systems that are getting even worse every day. Each year we learn more about the Treasury Department. With under the Treasury Department, the Internal Revenue, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and the notorious Interpol organization that was started in Europe in the time of Adolf Hitler, when Germany was just a young fascist country going to a full-blown fascism, combined with France, and Interpol then became the headquarters for the international police, and I'll talk about that at great length later in the program and probably next week also, in the links of the Nazis and the narcotic dealers and the worldwide heavy syndicates linked to our CIA and our intelligence systems in England, France, Germany, and the business of narcotics traffic that our Treasury Department is actually in to fund the assassination squads. This is what the purpose of bringing narcotics in to France was about. When France was in Vietnam and they were fighting an unpopular war, they decided to go into the opium and heroin traffic and use the profit from that for their secret intelligence squads so that the people at large wouldn't know how large their budget was. This information I got from the Ajax file that I'm going to go into detail with you about. The Ajax file is an analysis of Interpol's failure to combat international drug trafficking, and I can explain to you why they fail at it and why it's set up merely to arrest young hippie types who are carrying marijuana or a small amount of drugs and really used to protect the larger syndicates and funded by our Treasury Department. If you want a copy of the Ajax file that I will be talking about, it was sent to me from the National Commission on Law Enforcement and Social Justice, the same group that have been doing such wonderful work on the link of the Nazis from J. Edgar Hoover's association up to the present time. The Ajax file, I figured out to copy at cost and postage because it's legal-sized paper. It comes to $1.85, and if you want to order the whole file, the 18 pages, you can have this report on international drug traffic and how the United States and the CIA got swept into the narcotics market. But these things were evident to me as early as 1972, in May 72, 1 month after Watergate, 1 month before Watergate arrests, actually. I paid my income tax in 1972 for 1971 in April. And then I saw an attorney here locally, and I sent in a letter requesting a refund, which you can do at that time. And that was just 6 years ago. I didn't have the Ajax file then, but I had enough research, having done investigative work on my own from 1963, in November 1963, up to 72, that I knew that our Treasury Department, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, was also in this country, like France, the umbrella team for Watergate assassination teams that were soon to be divulged. I knew that we had assassination teams in this country. And a month later, the evidence of the links of the Treasury Department to the assassins and men like G. Gordon Liddy and Mr. Caulfield, threatening to kill James McCord if he didn't hush up on the Watergate arrests, was coming out of the Treasury Department. And Gerald Ford, of course, had brought G. Gordon Liddy from New York into the Treasury Department. So 1 month before the Watergate arrest, this was in May 1972, May 18th, I sent a letter to the Department of Internal Revenue, and I thought I would read that to you because this is what I was doing 6 years ago. I said, "Dear sirs, enclosed is the form requesting a refund of my paid taxes for the year of 1971. There are various bases for financial changes on your form. Many people are presenting tax cases at this time in objection to the Vietnam War. To my way of thinking, Vietnam is a small fraction of a major sickness. The United States of America was overthrown by a coup d'etat November 22, 1963. The killing of the president of John F. Kennedy was done for the purpose of maintaining power in this nation that was tightened with clandestine controls following World War II. Nazi generals, scientists, makers of war machinery and ammunition, with the help of John Dulles, Foster Dulles, and Alan Dulles, were settled in the United States. They relocated in an enclave at Tyrol in Jamaica. John Connolly, the former head of our Treasury Department until just this week, he resigned just the week that I sent this in, is a member of this secret clandestine group. The taxes that people support pay a budget of between $60 and $80 million to keep documents locked in the National Archives that would prove my allegations about assassinations and conspiracies. In a democracy, we need few secrets, much less to spend that amount of tax money to lock them up. The Freedom of Information Act is not being properly used. All reports and evidence of these conspiracies and murders belong to all the people. The Treasury Department hires political assassins. The Justice Department manipulates the trials so the facts are never exposed. The executive branch locks up the existing evidence of the conspiracies. My taxes would pay for public service to literally dig our own graves. We need to expose the war, and we need to expose this barbarian behavior. Sincerely, May Brussel." And I went on, enclosed is a letter with my payment, a copy of the letter that I sent when I paid my taxes. I sent in a letter of my feelings about the government and the Treasury Department, their assassins. And I said, "In addition to that information, I have other reasons for wanting a refund. The Department of the Treasury, through agents of tobacco, alcohol, and firearms, make deals for assassination teams in the United States. I have copies of tapes and arrangements of your tapes agreeing to bring Eldridge Cleaver home in a box. You allow men such as Sonny Barger with narcotics charges out on the streets in exchange for the possibility of murdering civil rights leaders, minority leaders, to keep the flow of narcotics going where it could be stopped. My particular interest is political assassinations. The Treasury Department is guilty, as is the Justice Department, in destroying democracy and replacing it with fascism. To support this system with my taxes would be identical to the fools in Nazi Germany who literally bought their own gas chambers. Signed, sincerely, May Brussel." I got a letter back months later, dated November 24, 1972, from the Internal Revenue and they said to me, "Your claim for a refund is disallowed. The reason given on your claim are not considered valid, and your claim for refund is denied." Now that it's 6 years later and the links of the Treasury Department to assassination teams is more evident, maybe I should refile for a refund this year and for the past taxes ever since I've known that alcohol, tobacco, and firearm were part of assassination squads. A few months later, 2 months, 3 months after that letter, that was in May 72 that I wrote that, in July 1972, the United Press had a story, it was a month after the Watergate arrest, in quotes, "A Treasury Department official went on administrative leave yesterday following a published report that he tried to persuade Watergate conspirator James W. McCord to keep quiet with a promise of executive clemency. John J. Caulfield, 44, asked for and was granted a leave from the Treasury Department. He was at least the 14th government official to step aside after being linked to the Watergate scandal. Caulfield, a 15-year veteran of New York City Police Department, with 3 years on the White House staff, went to the Treasury Department. And since then, he was the Assistant Director for Criminal Enforcement of the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Caulfield held sessions, secret meetings last January with James McCord on trial for conspiracy. Caulfield was a key aide to presidential assistant John D. Ehrlichman and later to White House counsel John Dean. If you remember, I've said on Dialogue Conspiracy that William Sullivan of Division 5 of the FBI was a liaison of the assassination teams from the FBI, the Defense Department. And William Sullivan also worked with John Ehrlichman and took papers from the desk of J. Edgar Hoover and put them in the hands of John Ehrlichman. The Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms Group were involved with Sonny Barger, and I had that information. Also, when they were arrested at Watergate, Press Secretary Ron Ziegler confirmed that E. Howard Hunt worked with the White House as a consultant in intelligence on the flow of narcotics. And that was one of the jobs that this famous group had at the time of Watergate. E. Howard Hunt, G. Gordon Liddy, Edgell Crow, Tony Laswitz, John Caulfield. They all came out of the state and worked for the Federal Narcotics Program, which was a cover and is a cover in France for assassination squads and is a cover for assassination squads in the United States of America. The name Sonny Barger, the man that I referred to in 1972, was arrested this week out on the streets. He was in Folsom Prison, spent 4 years there of a 10-year sentence, and just was released, and he was arrested again this week. Sonny was up to his old trips. He's been charged with having two handguns, a rifle, and a machete. Sonny Barger was pretty cocky, and I'm sure that he believes that they can't keep him in prison very long because of the work that he did for alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. He was very useful in plowing into the anti-war protesters in Oakland at the depots during the demonstrations there. He worked with the government intelligence and the Hell's Angels. Were very useful at the rock concert. Yeah, it was Aldemont in 1969. I was saying the opposite. Woodstock was in the summer. It was Aldemont. In 1969, the Rolling Stone concert, where the Hell's Angels were used to murder a black man on camera. A movie was made called Give Me Shelter. The rock concert was visualized as violent, and the CIA, the defense agencies, the Treasury Department, all came right into this act, which I believe was staged for the purpose of showing the world that those hippies, that are the flower children that love peace, are really violent. And for all purposes, the Aldemont concert just ended the rock concerts for what they were ever going to be again. Now it's a different ball of wax, but the image of Gimme Shelter is played over and over again. And at the time, Sonny Barger in those days was working very heavily with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. There was an article, December 22, 1972, a UPI story, that Hell's Angel Sonny Barger offered to give the police the bodies of political radicals in return for the release of jailed motorcycle gang members. Now, one of those was Cesar Chavez, and the other was Eldridge Cleaver, that he offered through the Treasury Department to kill. And I have a tape cassette of Larry Shears, the agent working for alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, who heard the men making a deal that they were going to offer Barger some chances to get out of arrest to kill Cesar Chavez and Eldridge Cleaver. I objected to paying my taxes in that letter that I sent was in May of 72. In December, the UPI carried the story that he was out, Sonny Barger was out, and said that he, in quotes, offered for each Hell's Angel relieved, he'd give the body of a weatherman available. Find the radicals and kill them. Later, Sonny Barger denied this, but Sonny Barger was working with the government and did admit in another article that he worked with the narcotics agents in December of 72. Here's a quotation from the newspaper. It said that he had been approached by law enforcement officers. They asked him to kill someone. He claims that he refused, but the reason these offers were called off, I believe, was that Larry Shears, like Louis Tackwood, came forward and exposed this fact. Sonny Barger admitted, in quotes, that he does in fact sell narcotics, that he makes phony driver's licenses in a dark room in his home. If you wonder how radicals and so-called leftists that are really from the right, such as the SLA or other radicals that appear to be from the left, actually are getting their documents. He had a mill for making driver's licenses and so forth, which I'm sure was an annexation of the Treasury Department again. And he admitted his narcotics dealings and said that for several years he did have deals with the Oakland authorities. Larry Shears was the man who had this tape with a contact man, a telephone call, and it went like this. Shears says on this tape, which I had in 72, This was before Watergate. Would you believe that Sonny Barger took the bait on Eldridge Cleaver? And the agent said, did you talk that over? He says, yes, Sonny will be calling me directly. I've been using, there's a dash there, a sound I can't hear, as a go-between up to this point. He will call me between 11 or 12 tonight, and he wants some answers. Can you go? The Treasury agent, the commander whose name I have, said, it depends on what he wants to know, Larry. Larry, he's on a federal bail jump wrap. He wants to stay on the streets bad, and he wants to give you Eldridge. What does he want? He wants to give you Eldridge, and he wants to offer him up dead. You know that, don't you? And the agent said, I don't give a damn if he's alive or if he's dead. We'll take him. I don't care if he's alive. He's subject to being dead when you get him, Larry Shear said. And the narcotics agent said, well, that's all right. And Larry Shears went on to say Sonny Barger was out on this rap. He didn't want to go back to jail if he could get out. And that he offered, in quotes, there's one thing I can do, is to put some people on a boat or a train or a plane and go to Algiers and have Barger on the same tape telling me that. I'll go over on a boat or a train, put him in a box, and we'll ship him back. Now, this was a conversation of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Larry Shears exposed the plans to kill Cesar Chavez and the Eldridge Cleaver. And I think the reason the men are alive today is that Larry Shears came forward like Lewis Tackwood and broke the story. And the links could be supplied through voice and the agents of the Treasury Department just shortly before the Watergate arrest. This scandal would have broken that the murders were called off. But then a year later, in March 1973, which is just 6 months later, Larry Shears, the man who made the tape recording of the agent, was picked up and put into jail on a weapons charge. He claimed that he had the weapons because, as an informer, with the press conferences he had, he was going to be killed. But he was picked up and put into jail, and I have never heard any more about Larry Shears or that case since that time. The article from Bakersfield newspaper, March 3rd, 73, said, Larry Shears, one-time narcotics informer who set off a controversy last year by claiming to know of a plot to kill Cesar Chavez, went to jail yesterday on a weapons charge. He began to serve a 60-day sentence for carrying a concealed weapon. He's in Kern County, and they put him in jail. He says he's in danger from those who want to kill him, and the judge denied that he was in danger and decided that even though he tried to uncover a plot to kill labor leader Cesar Chavez, that having the weapon was not important, and therefore he was sent to jail. And if any of you have heard any more about Larry Shears, I would like to know about it. But that whole episode angered me so much that I had written and asked that my money be returned on the basis that this Treasury Department is the branch of the assassination teams. And we'll go into the Ajax file and confirm how the French have used the assassination teams as hidden under the narcotics traffic. There's a heavy link between the narcotics traffic, the CIA, the FBI, the syndicate, and the assassination teams that do the work for the larger power structure. And speaking of narcotics, which is the serious umbrella under which terrorism is the excuse for getting the terrorists excited and causing this violence in every country, the Japanese, the German terrorists, the Palestinian groups, they're all linked to drug smuggling and narcotics and the extreme right wing, not to the left at all. And the public officials that are crying terrorism are using this. This is a whipping boy for the next purge of people that we can't talk about communists anymore. The new FBI director this week is out after terrorists. He's starting anti-terrorist training. He's not looking for communists anymore. And I may go into the death this week, the mysterious death of the leader of Dr. Wadi Haddad. I do want to talk about that for a minute. Again, this is terror on the right that is concealing the international narcotics market with the Treasury Departments and the intelligence system, the FBI and the CIA. Now, Evel Younger, the former district attorney in Los Angeles, the attorney general of the state of California, is running for governor, but he's been linked to Squad 19. He was in charge of the law enforcement in the L.A. area when Mr. Martinez served and Lewis Tackwood and Larry Shears. And, of course, he did nothing about these exposés because these men were blowing the whistle on something behind the scenes that wasn't supposed to be told any more than the truth of the Robert Kennedy assassination was supposed to be told. But now Evel Younger is getting in the Narcotic Act, which is typical because he was in the Squad 19 Act with the Watergate defendants and was named by Lewis Tackwood, and Donald DeFries worked for Edvall Younger. So here we have Edvall Younger in 1978 starting a school for narcotics, which is, again, part of the problem. But the people that are in charge of the investigation, such as Interpol or the Los Angeles or the California law enforcement, the international police, are also the cause of the problem. Edvall Younger is starting a school for narcotic agents, a squad, and I'm going to read to you, this is from a newsletter printed by Jim Horowitz in Los Angeles called Between the Lines. It said, gubernatorial candidate and powerful California attorney Edvall Younger has set up a secret academy for the training of narcotic officers from all over the world. The program operates out of the California Justice Department and is the keystone to the new law enforcement empire. Younger's Dope Academy functions under the cover of CNIN, California Narcotic Information Network, and constitutes, besides a training site, a network of literally thousands of operatives across America, who will all report directly or indirectly to Edvall Younger and his staff. The program began in 1973 as an extension of Richard Nixon's scheme to use narcotic enforcement, this is again the Treasury Department, as a stalking horse for him to build a new intelligence empire, which I add here, which isn't in the newsletter of Jim Horowitz, is the Gestapo that James McCord blew the whistle on once because he said it was identical to the German Gestapo. Horowitz went on to say, this explains how it is that such Watergate plumbers such as E. Howard Hunt, G. Gordon Liddy, Edgell Crowe, Tony Laswitz, and John Caulfield all came out of the state and federal narcotics program, which is in the Treasury Department. The Nixon-Younger plan is and was to replace the anti-communism flag of the 1950s and early 60s with a law and order rallying point centered on anti-narcotics propaganda, but actually concerned with coordinating electronic surveillance, more informers, more undercover agents, and they will use air and marine strike forces. So in the last 2 years alone, Edvall Younger has a super agency where he has trained, in quotes, 1,200 narcotic officers. Thus, the same old boy network that Nixon had set up several years ago, is already in place, and Edvall Younger's great police and intelligence power is now swollen to national proportions. You see, this is important because Edvall Younger and Ed Davis are both running for governor, but one is now president of the International Police, which I really don't know much difference from Interpol, that Nazi narcotic dealing outfit, the syndicate. Ed Davis is president of International Police, just retired this last year, past president. Edvall Younger is linked to this other squad, and these men are grooming for an international national position. So if one of them gets to be governor, the other will be appointed head of the FBI soon. If the director, in quotes, gets sick, they can be justices of the Supreme Court. One of them was going to be or suggested. They can move on to national police agencies or retire and work for Intertel, which is really the Howard Hughes combine, the Summa organization, and retired people from the Justice Department. If neither of them win as governor and one of them wins, the other one will go on to national, international position. If neither of them win, they'll both go on to organizations like Interpol or Intertel, and these large combines that are protecting the Nazi narcotic traffic that is flowing and picking up the hippies and the little small dealers and letting the international ones get by, as well as the international terrorists, which are really from the right and not from the left. Edvall Younger's old boy network is in place. It's in place now. And Younger's great police and intelligence power is at national proportions right now. For instance, the California agency, that's CNIN, California Narcotics Information Network, recently spent $142,640 to train police officers from Washington, Oregon, Nevada, and Arizona. Not just California. The California agency is training police in Washington, Oregon, Nevada, and Arizona with special air and drug operations. If Younger becomes governor of California, he will at the same time reign over a secret police network whose elite vanguard is being trained at your taxpayers' expense, the CNIN, and all the while, the statistics prove beyond any doubt that narcotics in the United States increase and that there are payoffs at the highest level. So we are getting a constant increase of narcotics. They know where they're coming from. They are flowing into these states. They know what countries they're coming from. Yet our tax dollars are being put into setting up police tuned into California computer and data systems under Evel Younger. And Ed Davis, as I say, was the president of International Police, which is not identical to Interpol, but I haven't been proven at any point that it is any different at all. And I know that when he had his convention in Los Angeles, he had the police chiefs from Argentina, Iran, all over Brazil, the most fascist, torture-bearing squads of the world were in Los Angeles being entertained by Ed Davis. Incidentally, Ed Davis, who wants to run for governor, is against the Evel Younger, and this is really gives both of them national and international prominence because there isn't a difference between the two men, not a hair's breadth difference, and they've worked together beautifully all these years with their counterintelligence on the right, making it look like the left, and their assassination squads. Ed Davis, in his campaign, came up with a wonderful idea. If you want to vote for him, he thinks that if he were governor, that all the Supreme and state courts should have non-lawyers appointed. Lawyers are too, he said, laws are too important to leave to the lawyers. There's no common sense in the laws, and that if he were elected, he would give lawyers a year to make some reforms, and then he would get them off, and they should be non-lawyers judging. Even almost every case except the most serious crimes would go non-lawyers, which means that the corporation heads would be the lawyers. You can see the president of the copper mines in Chile being a judge before a labor leader that's arrested in Chile, and let a layperson, not a lawyer, know what their rights are. How would you separate your pocketbook from your decision? It would be impossible. Not that the lawyers do it now, but it would be even worse. Before I get to the Ajax file, which I'm just going to have a few minutes to start, and we'll go into it next week, I did want to do it uninterrupted, but we can go back and do it in a two-part series. Dr. Wadi Haddad died, and of course he died under mysterious circumstances. It couldn't be just a plain old ordinary death like anybody else, because of course I've alleged that he is one of the big mysteries of our times, and therefore his death would be just as mysterious and clouded in questions. The mystery was A, what's the cause of his death, and B, what's the place of his death. First we heard it was in East Germany, then we heard it was in Beirut, Lebanon. He was described by the various Palestinian groups as a martyr. That the word martyr isn't used usually to describe a death by illness. He worked with the Baader-Meinhof gang from Germany and the Japanese Red Army, and I claim that both of those groups, those allies of World War II, the Germans and the Japanese, were incorporated by the Americans into our system of favors and reconstructing Germany and Japan to make them the great empires that they are in business. And also we use their expertise in terrorism because it gives our police more muscle. It gives us a chance to get our police tightened up like Hitler's police were tightened up in Germany by having this violence. You get the police. He worked with another man named Dr. George Habash. And if those of you that have the tapes on Dialogue Conspiracy on the murder of Martin Luther King, the Robert Byron Watson testimony, I talked about Mr. Haddad and Dr. Habash as working in the international drug smuggling and coin shops and headquarters in Marietta, Georgia. And Dr. Habash has offices in Chile. And that this is terror from the right. And they make it look like Marxist terror so that new people like our director of the FBI comes out with his first statement that they'll have intensified training at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, on terrorism. I once said that Patrick Gray's nephew, Donald Gray, is teaching at Quantico, Virginia, and that he's the man who shot Donald DeFries at close range in the alley at the time of the shootout in Los Angeles. In order to silence the terror really was coming from the right and the links of DeFries to Los Angeles Police Department. The Carlos of Venezuela is another terror from the right, terrorists from the right. The news will be filled with terrorism and editorials and more from our FBI director. Next week, I'll do a little more regarding my taxes, your taxes, the Treasury Department, the Ajax file, and the links to international terrorism and narcotics traffic by our federal agents. But we can't do it this week. The time is up. begrudgingly pay your taxes, ask for a refund, and maybe by next year we'll have some way to counteract this where we can really think it out together. Meanwhile, this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.